the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to another installment of the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. Like always, I have Jason Bond with me, and today we got Jeff Gore sitting in the studio. Going to give us a little update about those critters that Don likes to call it out there and about in the rice world. So how you doing, Jeff?
Doing good.
Jason, your hair looks a little disheveled this morning.
Yeah, I took my hat off before I had to put your fancy hot headphones on.
Oh, those earmuffs are doing just fine for you.
They make your ears hot, though.
Well, they do make your ears hot, but I think part of that is because the air conditioner in this building ain't quite ginning.
Yeah, but it's better than it was last year. I don't know what policy changed, but it's better than it was last year. Did we ever change it? I know we were talking about changing it one time.
We're in the process of changing it, but, you know, got to be bitted out, all that good stuff. Okay. But, Jeff, glad to have you on. This is a, what, is this the first time you've been on this year?
It is. And I think we'll probably start doing some entomology podcast here pretty soon, too.
Well, that's just because that cotton's getting ripe.
It is the season for insects.
You told me earlier not to say cotton, Bobby.
Well, we'll talk about cotton a little because you can't fill up the bugs in a rice field in a jar right now.
It's been an interesting year this year so far in rice. I expected some different things from a bug standpoint.
So, Jeff, talk about the bugs. It's been an interesting year, you said.
Yeah, it's been an interesting year this year from an insect standpoint. There were some things that early on I was kind of expecting to be a problem that ended up not being a problem. And from a rice water weevil standpoint, they're always somewhat of a problem in Mississippi, and that's been the case this year.
So I know, talking about rice water weevils, y'all have been doing an awful lot of work with rice water weevils, and particularly in row rice situations, right?
Yeah, well, both. I wouldn't say particularly in row rice, but we have done some row rice work.
Well, I know the previous students, we redone the rice water weevil thresholds, and are we to where you're setting one in row rice now differently than flooded rice, or where are you at with that?
Well, we don't really have a threshold for rice water weevils because once we have an infestation in the rice, there's nothing you can do. So everything's preventative from a rice water weevil standpoint, and that's one of the insecticide seed treatment.
All right. And there's a new one of those on the market right now?
There is a new one of those on the market right now. Typically, in Mississippi, we've used mainly the neonicotinoids, which are Nipset and Cruiser.
Man, I wish I could say that word. I can't say it. Say it again.
Neonicotinoid.
Can't say it.
It takes a special education to say that word, Bobby.
I guess I didn't receive that one.
But anyway, the new one we have out is Fertenza. It's a diamide similar to the old Dermacor that we've had.
I can say diamide.
Yeah, that's easy. And we have a fair amount of Fertenza that actually got treated this year on rice seed. So that's a good thing, spreading out the different chemicals that we're using.
So I know there's been a lot going on in the world with the neonics, and we rely on them very heavily. Adding the diamide's a good thing. Is that for resistance or?
Well, it's for a couple of reasons. And one of the things that we ran into this year, I got a lot of calls about up until this point, is people that had seed treatments on their rice. One of our recommendations in the past is especially on some early planted rice where it struggles coming out of the ground and it takes a while to get to the flood. A lot of times that neonic seed treatment runs out before we put the flood on, so we also have to make a foliar spray for rice water weevil. With something like Fertenza or even Dermacor, there's a little bit of Dermacor in the state this year also. Being diamides, they have a lot longer residual control, and I wouldn't worry about adding the pyrethroid spray when we go to flood for rice water weevil when we have one of the diamides added.
No, I'm just listening.
Well, you're being awful quiet over there.
Well, I was soaking it in.
Learning about rice seed treatments, huh? Maybe by not having to spray that extra time offset some of the costs of the newer chemistry?
It does a little bit, but most of the time it's more of a headache kind of spray.
Doesn't fit in with anything else.
Or not really a headache spray. No, it actually, you know, most of the time when we make those pyrethroid sprays, it's going out with that pre-flood herbicide application. So it's not a huge additional cost, but it's really that peace of mind that you get with a seed treatment, and especially one like Fertenza or Dermacor that has a long residual, that you get that peace of mind and knowing that it's out there and that every plant in that field's protected.
So you're talking about peace of mind and seed treatment and residual. One, typically how long is a residual? And two, with a year like this year, with all the rain we've had, how does that influence it?
I would say under ideal conditions with those neonicotinoid seed treatments, probably 3 to 5 weeks. And then as you add rainfall or cool weather, anything like that delayed emergence, it's going to shorten that residual down to maybe 2 or 3 weeks. And, you know, the thing that you always have to remember is, especially on a lot of the early planted stuff, is that when that seed goes in the ground, the clock starts ticking on how long that seed treatment's going to work. It's not when the rise comes up. So if it takes it 10 days or 2 weeks to come up, you've already lost 10 days or 2 weeks of that residual control. If it comes up in 5 or 6, 7 days, you know, that's obviously a better scenario. In terms of getting the rise to flood.
Jeff, you mentioned the foliar pyrethroid in with that pre-flood herbicide. How critical is that timing? You know, 'cause when we're talking about the herbicides, we're always talking about the timing relative to how fast you can get the water on. What does it take for that treatment? I mean, that's a more or less a contact treatment, right? So you're killing adults to keep them from laying eggs that'll produce larvae that messes you up.
That's correct, and timing is essential with that application. And most of the time, we're mixing it in with the herbicide, the pre-flood herbicide, and that usually is not the optimum time.
But it's too far, right?
I mean, it's too early. It's a little too early because the majority of weevils or adults are going to move into that field once we start putting water on the field. Yeah. That moving water, they move at night, the reflection of the water from a moonlight attracts them to the field. And so a lot of times that being mixed with that pre-flood herbicide is a little early, but that doesn't mean it doesn't work. It just doesn't work as effectively as it might have if we had waited 3 or 4 days till that flood's on the field, put the application out then. And it's really, you know, growers have to weigh the risk and benefits in that situation of paying an additional application fee or suffering a little less control. And, you know, in most situations, we've seen good enough control with that pre-flood timing.
What percent of the acre do you think get that treatment?
I don't know if I have a good feeling for the percentage. I would say it's a lot. It's really because it's almost a no-brainer going out with the herbicide because you're not paying for the application cost. Most of these generic pyrethroids are no more than $1 or $2 an
right,
acre.
That's what I was thinking.
Been hearing.
Low use rates and low cost on top of low use rate.
And, you know, it sounds, I know, a little strange for an entomologist to say that, because most of the time we're saying if you don't need an insecticide, don't put an insecticide in the tank for convenience. And, you know,
IPM.
Yeah, that's right. And in this situation, it's a little bit different because we're always going to have rice water weevils at some level. Whether or not they're economical or not, it's questionable. But most of the time, what we've seen in all of our surveys across the state is we can have economic damage in just about every field, and even some economic damage even behind the seed treatment. Those seed treatments don't provide absolute control of rice water weevils, even the best one. So it's kind of like a seed treatment in cotton. It's something that we recommend because we know we're going to have thrips in cotton every year. So it's just a good practice for us on most of our acres in Mississippi.
So let's flash forward a little bit to where we are today. You know, we think about rice water weevils being the first insect we have to counter in a rice field. We're getting ready to start heading. Now, you look at the USDA estimates, they said we're about 17% headed in the state. I feel like we're probably closer to 5 to 10% headed, and a lot of that's on edges of fields and maybe spots that got a little less nitrogen, a little streaky. Going into that, knowing that we've only got maybe 5 to 10% of the rice heading now, how big of an issue is rice stink bugs going to be in a year where our early rice might be planted a month ahead of the next rice?
Well, it can be a big issue. We've been sampling some, doing some sweeping of grasses, and it doesn't seem like rice stink bug numbers are just unusually high this year. That's not to say that they can't blow up all pretty quick, because they can, but we haven't seen any indications that we're going to have a bad rice stink bug year. Now, the key is that always the worst rice from a stink bug standpoint that needing to get sprayed is always the first rice that heads and the last rice that heads. So it's definitely, you know, some of this first rice that's starting to head, there's definitely the potential there to have some significant rice stink bug populations that need to be sprayed.
Hey, Ben's coming over. I was just letting you know when the door opens, it's going to be Ben.
Okay. It's going to be that big woolly monster.
Big perm.
We drove by y'all yesterday when you were standing out there, and somebody goes, "Who is that with that boofy hair?"
Big perm. Jeff, I know when Dr. George was here, he did a bunch of stuff on, you know, stink bugs and grass, and we got a lot of grass, you know, the last couple of years. How big a factor is that? I mean, how much grass do you have, you know, escaped in your rice field to move the needle on a stink bug infestation?
Well, it doesn't seem to, the escaped rice in the rice field doesn't seem to have a big impact. It's the grass that's around the rice field and okay, out on the turn rows and ditches that is where most of our populations are coming from that eventually end up in rice. The one thing that we have seen with grass infestations in rice is normally the grass is going to start heading before the rice.
Right.
And so we can get some stink bugs moving in to the rice field before the rice heads in those situations.
So in a year like this year where it's been so wet, we haven't mowed a lot of turn rows or cleaned up ditch banks, be a little concerned? But you said you wouldn't find it much in your sweeps yet.
Yeah, we're not seeing a lot. We didn't see a lot in the spring. One thing that we've learned from George's work is that Italian ryegrass was always a really good predictor of rice stink bug numbers. It was,
well, they should be off the chart then.
Well, no, I mean the numbers that are in that we find, yeah, in Italian ryegrass in the spring, and we didn't find a whole lot in the, I mean, I shouldn't say a lot, we found some,
right?
There's always going to be some, but it wasn't just anything that made me, that blew my hair back, so yeah, to speak.
Jeff, you don't have any hair, do you?
I mean, your hair got blew back a long time ago.
Yeah, it did.
I ain't jinxed myself.
I can say it. I ain't got nowhere to go. I'm headed down that path.
You can. Bobby had a bunch of hair when he got to Stoneville.
I didn't.
No, I've never known you to have hair. I've known you for 25 years.
Yeah, I was going bald in high school.
Yeah, Stoneville hadn't been kind to Bobby.
Very stressful job.
You handle it well.
Well, we try. We try. Jason, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, talking about George's work and the grass and rice fields and grass along the edges of rice fields. It always makes me think about you and your turn row sanitation talks and listening to you talk to people on the phone about that. You got anything to?
Well, and I was going to, that's was going to be my last comment related to that. I mean, there's, that would be another incentive for, you know, managing those kind of fall into the category of, you know, non-crop areas is, you know, obviously the seed production in my world, but then if we can move the needle on rice water weevils, then that's a positive aspect of it as well.
Well, we can definitely move the needle on rice stink bugs.
Did I say water weevil?
You did.
Oh, man. You knew what I meant. Yeah. I apologize.
We know you zoned out over there in your own soliloquy.
Ben walked in and...
Well, you told us a while ago, Ben's going to come in so y'all don't get all distracted and look at yourself.
I know.
So one thing that people may be wondering about is I mentioned at the beginning that there was one insect that I predicted was going to be bad and hadn't really blown up, and that was fall armyworms.
Man, I saw a picture the other day on Twitter of some fall armyworms and some, I guess it was wheat in Oklahoma. Oh, my Lord, never seen anything like it.
Yeah, we found a lot of fall armyworms early in world stage non-BT corn and grain sorghum, much earlier than we usually find them. That's why I was thinking that we were going to might have the potential to have a bad fall armyworm year in rice this year. But I really hadn't heard of much. I don't know if y'all have heard anything in rice with fall armyworms or not.
You know, normally we'll get some calls and I'll call you and say, what are you hearing? And you'll say, yeah, I've been getting some calls too. But it seems like this year I haven't got a call about armyworm.
Yeah.
Not a single call.
Neither. Maybe they're all just in the non-BT corn and grain sorghum this year with a little bit of sorghum we have.
Do we have sorghum?
Yeah, we do. Yeah,
you've seen a sorghum field?
Well, no, I haven't actually seen it, but somebody asked me. I've had a couple questions about it, and then somebody told me they saw some. So you've seen something if you see a milo field now. I mean, you know, whatever year that was, the last year we had a significant acreage and we killed all of it with Roundup, we hadn't had much since.
What, Roundup didn't take out the sugarcane aphids, did it?
Yeah, that was an ugly deal.
The biggest thing, the one thing we didn't talk about is row rice. We talked about it from a weevil standpoint, but from an insect standpoint, the one thing that we have seen in this row rice or fur irrigated rice is this rice bill bug. And we're doing a lot of working on rice bill bug. Folks in Arkansas are doing a lot. We're working with them. And the one thing I can tell you is we don't know a whole lot about it. The recommendations, we can't really find anything to control it. The one thing that we have noticed is that the neonic seed treatments, either Dermacor or Fortenza, seem to protect yield. I won't say that they're controlling the bill bugs, but they do seem to be protecting yield based on the little bit of data that we have so far. But that's going to be a game changer for row rice because it's probably something that's going to continue to build the populations over time, the longer and longer we're growing this row rice.
Now, does soil texture, you talked about Arkansas having problems, does soil texture play some type of role in that?
It doesn't really seem to. Soil texture tends to have a big impact on a lot of soil insects, but, I mean, we're seeing it on heavy ground, on light ground. It doesn't really seem to matter right now.
I just know growing up on that side of the river, there's problems on that lighter ground that we don't often encounter with bugs,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, like they deal, in a lot of their rice areas, they deal with grape calaspis before the flood. That's something that we just don't see a lot of on our heavier soils over here.
All right, Jeff, well, we really appreciate you taking time out of your morning to sit down and talk with us. I know y'all stuff is really ramping up now, and we'll be watching you from inside while y'all are out there sweating and counting bugs.
Yes, it's.
And we're winding down on our stuff. So thank y'all for listening. If we can do anything for you, of course, just give us a call.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.